Welcome to the podcast series, Ascendem, brought to you by Heidelberg University's Graduate School for Humanities and Social Sciences. Tune in for thought-provoking interviews with experts in different fields, from the social sciences to the humanities, from law to economics. Welcome to HGGS podcast series, Ascendem. Today we have Nadia Zamira Frenkel from the University of Heidelberg, Faculty of Modern Languages. Welcome, Nadia.
Thank you very much.
Well, let me start with asking you about your PhD thesis and also maybe about your academic background. Could you briefly explain us what was your academic background, and in which you can also tell us more about what was the driving motivation that you also found your PhD thesis really interesting? And for the information of our listeners, we are going to talk about comparative perspectives on literary travel motives in contemporary Jewish literature of Germany, Israel, and USA. So, Nadia, what was your motivation and what is your briefly academic background?
Yes. I did my bachelor's at the University of Mannheim in German studies, so literature and linguistics, but also cultural, media, and communication studies. And then I pursued my master's at the University of Heidelberg in comparative literature. And I mainly worked with gender studies throughout my literary studies. But in 2021, I discovered like the political perspective on modern Judaism in Germany. And I read Desintegriert Euch by Max Czolek, which kind of led me to Jewish literature and also more of a Jewish public. And it got me interested in how Jewish authors actually position themselves in texts, but especially also in novels. And then I realized that there is a lot of novels in Germany that are concerned with like the political and societal position of Jews in Germany, but also that there's a lot of travel novels, and that kind of caught my attention. And then I switched my main focus from gender studies more to like Jewish literature. And I did my master thesis on this topic, but only in Germany. And after my master's, I decided to broaden that in a PhD thesis and compare Germany to the US and Israel.
That's great. And it's a really great shift that you switch from actually gender studies to Jewish studies. So how did you decide on actually to switch from gender studies to Jewish studies? And is it possible to have maybe in your research to find some clues about gender studies as well?
I think towards my master thesis, I had done so much gender studies at this point that it was also just kind of nice to do something else when I found something else that I was interested in. However, I find gender studies in literature extremely important and extremely interesting. And it's always there because gender is such a big concept we're working with, like in society, in art, in literature. Gender is definitely everywhere and it always comes up. And I think it's actually difficult to do literary studies without gender unless you're just looking at style and like very formal aspects of literature. But I think gender is always there. And it's also still in my PhD because it is so much about belonging and about what categories do we belong in and which do we not belong in? Do we belong to any or all of them at the same time? And then gender and also sexuality become factors in that, because they are also parts of the travel motive, of what changes in the characters and how they experience the world, how they interact with others. I also have one novel that's very much concerned with transitioning your gender, which is also a form of travel, you could say, and of belonging and like social categories that people put each other in or themselves in. So I think gender is still always there.
Actually, we are going to talk about this identity politics and how we construct and deconstruct or reconstruct the identities. But First, I'd like to start with concretizing the travel motive, because it's at first glance, or when you first heard about this topic, travel is connotated with the positive images and positive emotions. But it's also a really broad term. And under this term, under this umbrella term, we can also understand voluntary travel types, involuntary migrations, present-day journeys. And sometimes when we understand travel, it cannot be really related with the positive emotions. So would you like to a little bit concretize what we should understand under this term travel, especially in the framework of your research?
Yes. So I think travel can be any kind of movement abroad, but it differs very much in the type. So in the novels that I'm working with, there's usually migration in the past of the plot. And of course, migration is usually not voluntarily. So this is maybe a different kind of travel, but it's not what we would look at like when we define travel today. So that's always happening in the background, and it shapes the experiences the characters have in the countries that they live in, because they are still kind of strangers, although they are maybe like the second or third generation there. But I'm only working with contemporary literature. So all the texts are published from 2000 on. And now if you look at the contemporary novels and the plot and the travel in there, you could categorize it as travel because it's definitely voluntarily. There's different types, like some travel and they don't know if they will come back. Some travel and they know for sure that they will come back 1 week later. Some go there because of professional reasons, because of work, of study. Some go there maybe because they can't stand their state of being in their home country right now, or how they are feeling in the world. So there's so many different motivations, and that's also extremely interesting to look at in the novels, because travel always confronts you with being a stranger again. If you're already kind of a stranger in your home country because you have a different religion, different migratory background, of course, there's things like gender, language, all of these categories. And then you travel and then you become even more of a stranger. But then I think you can also analyze your own categories and identity even more clearly, because the setting is so different again. And I think it's interesting also to compare the different types, if it's different, whether you go there for a job or if you go there just because you felt like it. So it's, yeah, a lot of different options there.
Actually, really connecting this topic, travel topic, with another distinction that can be made under this motif travel. The first one is the more concrete one, more literary one, which is the external travels. So we can also define them as special replacements or change of the individual. But we can also talk about in a metaphorically sense and internal travels. So how do you connect these two different types of travels, like spatial replacements, and how do they reflect on our inner journey and inner emotions, inner feelings, or inner political stance, maybe?
Yes. I came up with a concept that's called self-dissolution and self-encounter. So talking about different categories and identity categories that the characters live in and they work with and they experience for themselves, sometimes there's a fluctuation between basically going out and away from yourself and meeting yourself again. And in all of these categories, you could also look at these movements as travel. So there is categories like gender, sexuality, but also trauma, sadness, loneliness, the relation to other characters and what they do and how the protagonists relate to the world through other characters, especially also their families or their love interests. There's societal categories like nationality, religion, language, and how they position themselves in these categories, and how their relationship changes to their own categories can also be seen as a form of travel, or as at least as a form of fluctuation, because the travel, the travel that actually happens in the plot is very much like an engine for all of these other categories, that it moves them. Because there's some there, of course, in the beginning, the characters are aware that they are, for example, German Jews, so you're not really part of the majority in Germany. But then when they go abroad, all of these other categories also kind of start to crumble and maybe like fall apart, but then come together as something new. And that is something that we find a lot in travel, in literature, also in other disciplines like anthropology, that there's concepts like when you go out in the world to travel, you might want to become a hero or come back a new person. And to look at these concepts also like in different disciplines and then to see what happens, like, do you become someone else abroad or do you not? And what happens when you come back and everyone else doesn't recognize that something has changed within you? Or what if you fail to become the other version that you'd hoped to become, or you didn't find utopia somewhere else when you hoped to find it? That's extremely interesting because travel happens on so many levels at the same time. And what is quite common, at least for German Jewish literature, I feel, is that identity is extremely fragmented in the way that it's portrayed. And sometimes there might be anger or sadness around that, of not belonging and of being so many different things and never being part of the majority. But at the same time, identity is also portrayed as fragmented in a programmatic way, that the authors and the characters are actually extremely ecstatic in their identities because there's all these categories in all these societal norms and they're kind of going out of all of them. So nothing is binary anymore. Everything just blurs into each other, which is also why a lot of like psychological takes are interesting for the thesis. And it seems programmatic that they write, the authors write novels with characters that also kind of refuse to be reduced to something and to binary categories. Because, for example, they are German and Jewish, but of course they are so much more. And I think that the travel really catalyzes these movements or these positions.
I'd like to highlight one critical concept that you also mentioned briefly. That's the utopia. Mm-hmm. And normally when we think about travel, we are not connecting this concept with utopia. And I think that's a really original point. Do you think that it can be generalized that every travel imminently has a search for utopia? Or do you want to highlight this point in terms of your research, actually, because you're also concentrating on a special societal group so that utopia plays a key role, actually, in the travel descriptions or in the travel explanations or more generally motives of these books that you examined?
I'm not sure if there is utopia in every kind of travel always, but I think it's extremely often that a concept of utopia or even like a hidden thought of utopia is there when characters go on travels and on journeys, especially because in my books that I'm working with, a lot of them go to Israel. And that, of course, is in a country that is extremely complex, but there is something there of like, it may have been the original land of Jewish people and there is still like a home there. It's the only Jewish majority in the world. Maybe the only country that Jews could ever politically be safe in. And I think going there and maybe not belonging there because, for example, if the characters' families came from the Soviet Union and then they lived in Germany and they had nothing ever to do with the country of Israel, still going there, there's some kind of connection to a homeland and to a safe space. And it's very interesting to see what happens when characters get there and then they may find out that they don't belong there either because they don't speak Hebrew, they are not Israelis, and it's very different still because they belong in so many categories and maybe they do also belong there, maybe not. That's like an individual process, I guess, for every book and every character. But it's there quite often, and even in the other countries, It's often about finding your family roots or finding out what happened to your grandparents during the Holocaust, where I like the tracks of time and what can you find out about that. And I think there's always some hope for closure and for understanding oneself and the own group better or the own family. And I guess that's also a way of looking for utopia, because there's always a certain search for closure in every piece of travel. I even read one book. It's an Israeli book, but it's set in the US, where they just go on like very little holidays, you could say. I don't know if I'm going to use this for my thesis, but I also thought it was interesting because the travel is not that big of a plot line. And still it happens all the time. Whenever there's like an inconvenience in the US, they just go on holidays to Mexico. And I also kind of feel like there's something there of like escaping and of hope and utopia somewhere else. So I think you could say that this is always there in travel, especially because you get confronted with like these other realities and other cultures and people. And then again, you also get confronted with your own and yourself. And I guess there's always a hope of becoming more whole in the process.
The concept that you explained is really interesting, not belonging to anywhere and trying to find somewhere that you belong to, but at the end of the day, you are not really achieving your goal. And I'd like to also connect this topic with the choice of your Jewish authors, and because you selected Jewish authors from the third generation, if I understood it correctly, and they have a peculiar place because they haven't experienced the atrocities that happened, the Holocaust that happened in the past, but they are also engaged with the collective memory. And in that framework, also memory studies plays a really important role. But first of all, I'd like to ask you, is that theme of not belonging to anywhere a special attribute that we can also align with the third generation Jewish authors if we compare them with the other generations, for example? And maybe in broader terms, you can also elaborate on why did you concentrate on actually third generation Jewish authors?
That's a good question. So at first, I chose the third generation mainly, first of all, because I had to figure out how to reduce the number of texts. Because if you look at all of them through all the generations, then there's just way too much. There's still so many. I'm still in the process of selecting which texts I'm actually working with, like in what intensity. And because there is actually a lot, although I have so many points of how to exclude texts, but still there are so many. But so personally, I'm most interested in contemporary literature. So that was an important point because I feel like there's so much to do in research and so much to find out in contemporary literature. And I don't particularly like to work with texts that are like 300 years old, where a lot has already been said. So I like to work with newer texts. That's maybe just like personal preference also. But I think it's also interesting because in the first generation, of course, there's a lot of trauma and anger, and also the idea of can you even write after the Holocaust, which is from Adorno, that said maybe we cannot produce art at all anymore, literature, after this happened. And there's other authors that said, no, we definitely do still have to write, like Paul Celan, for example. And then in the second generation, there's so many different approaches on how to deal with the trauma of your parents, but also like the secondhand trauma that you still have and everything that's also going on in the countries during these decades. And I think in the second generation, there were already people that were quite vocal and angry about what is going on in their countries, especially in Germany, because after the Shoah, it has always been said that there's like a negative symbiosis in Germany and that Jews and Germans, which is already weird to separate that because there are also a lot of German Jews, or Jews are living in like a negative symbiosis with Germany. So that's how you could put it. And then there were people like Maxim Biller, for example, that were already angry. And they said that the way that Germany is treating the memory of the Holocaust is not correct. And or how German politicians are actually handling the minority of Jews in Germany is not correct. But I think in the third generation, people got more vocal, for sure. I think in the second, it was a little more subtle, for not for all of them, but for a lot. For example, Barbara Honigmann has written wonderful novels. But and everything that I'm talking about right now and what they felt like wasn't right in Germany, it was already there. But I feel like in the third generation, that became a lot more vocal. And now looking at the authors that I'm working with in Germany, like Olga Krasnova, Sascha Salzmann, but also looking at Julia Rabinowitsch, Omona Funk, all the people that are public Jewish authors, they are very concerned with like the political and societal state of Jews in Germany. So this is very interesting. It's also like part of my questions, whether German Jewish literature is more emancipated and less assimilated because of the memory of the Holocaust and because of the state that German Jews find themselves today in Germany. Because in Germany, there's often spoken about something called a media triangle, that Jews are only viewed as either predators, as in the Middle Eastern conflict, or as the victims looking at the Shoah and antisemitism. But often there seems that there is no space for German Jews to actually be people, and people that are very different from each other, like Jews can also be queer or black or can have, I don't know, like any kind of profession. It's not like all Jews are just religious people in the synagogue. But sometimes it seems like this is the portrait that is there of Jews in Germany. And I think that that leads to literature being more angry, being less assimilated. And I'm interested in finding out how that differs from the third generation in the US and in Israel, because in the US, I think Judaism is a lot more normal, especially in culture, like in sitcoms, in series, in books. There's a lot more Jews there, and Jews are also more than just Jews. Like if you have a Jewish character in a sitcom, that character might be Jewish, but the character can also be a lot more. In Germany, I feel like if you have a Jewish character, especially if it's not written by Jewish authors, then that character is Jewish and that's it. Like the character is not gay as additionally or something like that. And I think in the US, Jewish literature is more assimilated. At the end of the day, it's still different. I mean, there's still a minority, but it's always also the biggest Jewish population in the world. And the Israeli Jewish population is a little bit smaller, but then again, it's the only country where Jews are the majority. So that's also interesting. Like, how does the third generation after the Holocaust work with their national and societal and historical background, because all Jews live in diaspora and they have for like 5,000 years. And so that's always there, like a component of diaspora and travel, migration and of belonging and not belonging. And then Israel is also like worldwide, it's still a minority. It's just that in this very small country, it's a majority. But then again, it's also a country that's highly conflicted, that has so many issues, especially with the politics today. And also so many categories that are brought up for, I think, Jews in Israel, but also worldwide, because Jews are quite often seen as also responsible for Israeli politics, although that's not the case. It's not even the people living in Israel that are responsible. It's the government. And I think navigating your own identity between all of these factors is extremely complex, but also extremely interesting. So I think the third generation can look very different from country to country. But I think what's important is that the third generation is quite vocal about like the political states that they are in their countries, I think. At least that's one of my theses. So yeah.
Actually, that's a really interesting topic, because you are talking about the third generation Jewish authors, but you are also talking about the differences between different countries. So I think in that case, it's fair to say that authors are also reflecting their societal environment to their works, actually. But in the framework of your research, what is the methodology that you are using to find patterns, similar patterns between the authors from the same countries or differences from the authors coming from different countries? I know that you are using also discourse analysis, but discourse analysis takes different shapes, actually, depending on your topic. So what is the methodology to find these patterns and differences actually in your research?
So first, when I was looking for the texts, I was looking for texts of the third generation and of authors that openly and actively position themselves as Jewish authors. Also because who is Jewish is like another very big complicated question. So I just chose authors that like identify and position themselves as Jewish authors. So, yeah. And then I was looking for texts that all have travel in the plot, in the contemporary plot, and that they have migration in the past of the plot, and that they work with a lot of like ambivalent like identity categories and topics. So that was something I was looking for, but especially for travel. So the main methodology that I'm using is motive analysis, I would say, but also narratology. And then because it's a very interdisciplinary topic, I'm using a lot of other discourses that are always used in literature. So we usually work with gender studies, trauma studies, memory studies. There's a lot that's overlapping in literary discourse already. And you could always kind of sum it up in discourse analysis or narratology, but I think more precisely it's motive analysis, because I'm mostly looking at the travel motive or what the travel motive does to the characters and to the self-positioning of the authors and the characters as a minority in their countries, or maybe the majority in Israel. But I'm also right now exploring some theories in other disciplines, like I said earlier, in anthropology or in sociology. What are their concepts to travel and identity? So I'm still trying to narrow these down or get like the essence of like some theories to like move them all together in like my travel concept. But I'm still working on that, because I recently shifted the focus of my topic from more like the fluctuation between self-disillusion and self-encounter, which is more rooted in identity and more like maybe also sociology, to the travel motive and a very literary analysis of the travel motive. So I'm still kind of working on the travel methodology. But I think since it's a very interdisciplinary topic, there's also like a lot of disciplines that have to be considered to make up a whole that's including of everything that's relevant.
I think it's fair to say that you are also facing with one of the most important challenges that a researcher can face, actually, which is what to include and what to exclude in the research project. Because at some time point, you have to decide, okay, I have to stop there and I have to establish the borders of my research so that I can also submit something at the end of the day. So I wish you really good luck with your PhD project. But one striking sentence that really attracted my attention was that, and I'm quoting, "Language could create a placeless homeland, a diasporic meeting place for Jews, or any entirely new concept of a place." So maybe moving on, as you explained this interdisciplinary research methods, you are also taking language as a place here, which should be analyzed from different perspectives, actually. And I really like this quote. And I think that can be also generalized for the different populations, different minorities, maybe also individuals who do not feel themselves belong to somewhere. So would you like to elaborate on, can this quote be generalized for all the minorities, or does that also take a special place in your research about the Jewish society, Jewish community?
That's interesting. I think that there's always some kind of home and belonging to be found in communication for every minority, but I guess also like for every person, no matter where they belong to or they don't, because I think human experience can only makes sense when it's shared, and also reality can only make sense when it's shared with others. So I think that could always be a factor. But at the same time, I have found that in the contemporary Jewish literature that I'm working with, language and communication and especially writing are also motives that come up a lot, not always, but most of the time. And they seem to also conjunct with the travel motive, because quite often the characters start to write about maybe their family history or the travel or their identity once they are abroad. Or sometimes they write letters to other people, or they talk on the phone all the time, which is also a way of like rooting yourself in communication and belonging with someone else in language, while you might not like physically belong anywhere right now. And I found that to be very interesting, that language could also be a home. And the point for like all minorities in all of these three countries, or like the Jewish groups in all of these countries, is not to say that they don't belong anywhere, but very much so that they belong to like a lot of contexts at the same time. So they, maybe some might feel that they don't belong for Germany, for example. Some might feel that they do feel very German. So that differs for every person, for every author, every character. But it can be that you don't belong anywhere, or you belong to like a lot of contexts at the same time, which can also be very beautiful and very adaptable and very rich in just being in a lot of spaces at the same time. But it can be complex. Like home can be a very complex concept to navigate, I think, especially for Jewish groups because of the diaspora and because of the extremely difficult political situation that Jews are constantly put in by majorities, I would say, especially regarding the Middle Eastern conflict now. Even besides that, anti-Semitism is still on the rise, although people usually think that wouldn't be true. But like also in Germany, anti-Semitic violence has doubled from 2024 to 2025. And identity can be extremely complex depending on the background. But I think especially for minorities, and so also for Jewish groups that always have to like explain themselves in every single, I think, layer of the identity, always have to explain their migratory background and their family history, although it shouldn't be people's business. But like, especially in Germany, people still like to ask random Jews that they meet, how did you survive the Holocaust, which is not okay in my eyes, but it happens all the time. And I think it's very difficult to kind of position your identity between all of that and like how you relate to the majority and to the outside groups of like your in-group. And I think finding some kind of home and belonging in language and in art is very beautiful, and it's a nice additional option that is there to like the other context that you could belong to, because you can also just belong to other people. You don't have to belong to a country or a language or something. You absolutely don't have to, especially because globalization. But I think it can still help if you can find roots somewhere. But language can also be one of them. Like it's an abstract space. And there's theories by, for example, literary studies of third spaces, which can be physical, but I think they don't have to be. So I think there's a lot of different options on how to relate to other people and your own group and other groups, and how to relate to each other. And I think that's also very beautiful.
In that context, I would like to also to concretize the topic more and more, read out one of the most interesting quotes actually from your research project. The aim is to understand literature as a space in which multiple truths and realities can be created, and in which authors can respond to the challenges of their social environment with aesthetic means. I'd like to highlight the challenges of their social environment here. And you also briefly mentioned about the social challenges that these third generation Jewish authors face, and also in general, in different countries, different Jewish societies also face with. But one concretizing element here can be the counter narratives against the existence or against the position, maybe political, maybe societal position or stance of the Jewish community. So in your research and comparing these novels that you also examined, What were the concrete counter-narratives that you faced with, and how did these authors actually respond to these counter-narratives in their novels?
Yes. So I think, especially in Germany, it's what I mentioned earlier, it's the media triangle that it's often seen that Jews only exist in the triangle of antisemitism, the Holocaust, and Israel and Israeli politics. And also that minorities are often seen as just one picture of what a minority is. And I think for Jews, that's often also a picture of Orthodox Jews, what they look like, what they live like. I think also that's also very specific for Judaism. It's often confused that Judaism is not just a religion. It just works differently than all other religions. And I think that's just complicated for a lot of people to grasp, that you can be Jewish and secular, you know, but you still belong to a body of people and to a history, and also like to transgenerational trauma and to a culture, as you can belong to religion. But it's possible to be completely secular and to still be Jewish and feel Jewish. And I think that's also extremely interesting about Judaism. And when the narrative is always that it's mainly about religion, it's mainly about the Holocaust or anti-Semitism, then where does that leave space for people to be people and also heterogenic people? Because I think minorities are often depicted as just one picture. And that goes for Jews, but also like for Muslims, for queer people, for disabled people. I think that happens to most minorities, that they are always asked the same questions. And I think especially in Germany, there is a certain valence between a certain hatred for Judaism, but at the same time for like an overly fascination. And that can also be difficult, I think, because if it becomes like a fetishizing position that you're laying on, then that is also not giving people space to be the people that they are in all of their facets that belong to their personality. I think in Germany that happens quite often, and a lot of authors also write about that, that when people know that you're Jewish, the response is quite often, oh, I've never met a Jewish person. And they don't even know your name because maybe you met them at some house party in the middle of the night. And then the next question is, well, how did you survive the Holocaust? And you're like, I mean, it's highly, highly problematic. Or people just wanting to know, like, does anti-Semitism really exist? Like, whatever happened to you? But like, if nothing ever really happened to you, then does it really exist? And I think it's extremely interesting how it can also fluctuate. And I think especially in Germany, there's often a position taken by the majority that you have to legitimize yourself. First and foremost, as Jewish, I think a very common question is your mother even Jewish? And I feel like, why would anyone care about that? But why would anyone feel like they have the right to ask that? And like to force someone to legitimize themselves of belonging to a group that they don't even belong to. I mean, this also happened in Jewish spaces, of course, which is also problematic, I feel, but it's still something different than when someone else asks you. And then you have to legitimize your belonging and then your experience with anti-Semitism and your family history. And you have to explain the Middle Eastern conflict, because just because you're Jewish, you are like the designated expert on explaining this to people. And I also feel like people often feel like you owe them to explain this conflict, which is so complex. I feel like not even a lot of like political scientists can explain this. And then as like a private person doing something else, you're still expected to explain this and explain your position and legitimize your position. And I feel like that's extremely problematic, and it doesn't leave space for people to just be people. And I think that's something that especially German Jewish authors are trying to subvert in their novels, because they are claiming that I think identity is so fragmented, and that, for example, you know, like you can be Jewish, yes, but then also 90% of German Jews migrated from the Soviet Union between 1995 and 2005. So now they have like a Russian or Soviet background, but they are also German, they are also Jewish, then they might also be maybe, I don't know, maybe some are queer, or they deal with a lot of like family trauma, or they don't, or they have other things, you know, that are so relevant to them right now. Maybe it's loneliness, maybe it's sexuality, maybe it's friendships, maybe it's relationship, it's love. There's so much to just being human. And I think going against all of these binaries and just going into like an ecstatic identity, that's something that I work with. Because, for example, also when characters start to drink a lot of alcohol or smoke a lot of cigarettes or take drugs, that's also extremely interesting because it also destroys all the boundaries of like reality and the consciousness and identity and what that does to people, which I also think that this can also be seen as a form of travel. That is extremely interesting to see how they piece all of this together. And I even sometimes feel like if a majority just views a minority as maybe it's religious people that go to a church that's called synagogue, and then you read a book of maybe like a bisexual woman doing drugs in Israel. And I think that's so interesting to just also show the majority, like it's still just a body of very different people and everyone is still individual. And I think that's pretty much what is told also in these novels. Definitely not in all of them, but there's a certain bubble, at least in German Jewish literature, that's concerned with that. And I think in the US and Israel, it doesn't happen as much, or maybe not as loudly, because the background is very different. And but that's also what I'm working on finding out. Like, how do these motives differ from each other? Where are they similar? Are they still there? Do they have the same intensity? Also, because it's not just about minority, but also of literary traditions per country that also just very much work into this discourse. For example, Germany has a big literature body and discourse of travel. And then that might also just be a factor why it's very prominent in Germany. Maybe it's less prominent in the US and Israel, because that's still also just how the literary discourse works in every country. But I think the ambition to show that minorities are also individuals is something that's always there in the novels. And I'm trying to work with a double lens at this point, because I think that all of these societal categories and everything that it can tell us about society, or the way literature can express what certain groups or individuals might feel about the world, is in literary research sometimes very much reduced to that. And I think that's also very problematic, because sometimes you read about novels in literary studies, so it's research, but then I feel like sometimes novels are not seen as novels anymore once they come from minorities, because at this point it very often becomes migration literature instead of literature. And then sometimes the content of like a research article is just, well, this is a novel about migration because there's migration happening. And then basically the same thing that at least the German Jewish public is often saying in Germany, that they are reduced to being Jewish, or like what the majority imagines what Judaism is, happens also in literary studies. I feel that the novels are not seen for the value that they bring artistically, for what they do with language, with motives, with stylistics. And it's not seen anymore. There's only, this is about migration. And I think that this is extremely problematic. Of course, there's also a lot of very good research, of course, but I also aim to fill this research gap, at least for this topic, because I feel there's little research that is actually concerned with novels as artistic works, and at the same time as texts that can be read in a political and societal order. And I think it's very important to do both at the same time. So I'm aiming to do that as well.
It's all of a problem of labels, actually, in the dichotomy of us and them, maybe. I was also planning to ask you actually one final question in our formal part, but I also realized that you gave all of the takeaways actually in your response to my last question. And those takeaways are actually applicable to many situations. And maybe to sum up, we should say that in order to become an individual, in order to be an individual, you shouldn't go through all of the difficulties, all of the challenges normally, as Nadia explained. Without these labels, you can also be an individual. Without defined by these labels, without categorized, you can also be an individual in this dichotomy of us and them. Would that be a correct interpretation?
Yes, I think so. I think you can have labels if you want to. And sometimes you also need labels to become loud in the first place.
Sure.
I think to like regroup and like recenter and like find out, okay, what makes minorities maybe different from majorities, or what positions are they in? So sometimes I think you need labels also to take political action.
Right.
Yeah. But at the same time, I think it's also, it would be great if everyone could be free of labels and everyone could just be. So I think it's actually both. Like, you can belong to them, but you don't have to. And especially the majority shouldn't force you to belong to them, to just these labels. I think that sums it up.
Yeah, thank you, Nadia. That's a great sentence to sum up our conversation in our formal part. And as traditionally, we also ask one personal question at the end of the recording. And I would like to ask you, because I know that you are really interested in art. And if I'm not mistaken, especially the contemporary art is the focus of your interest. Surely literature is a form of art, but apart from that, apart from your research efforts, I'd like to ask you how arts and how is your interest in art actually affected your academic research, or did it affect your research efforts? And did you find any muse, any inspiration in art, and you reflected that inspiration to your academic works? Or maybe it's becoming a longer question, actually, but you can also say that art is not something that is done for the academic efforts or for the professional life, but also for yourself. I don't know how you consider that. It's a long question, sorry, but I'm really curious about your answer.
I think about maybe the second half of the question, I think art can be completely done just for oneself, for sure. But I also think that the private is political, and also art is political, especially for minorities, especially for women or queer people or Jews or Muslims or Buddhists, whoever. And I think it is difficult to produce and also look at art without a political perspective, unless maybe you're just, I don't know, painting nature. But I don't know. I think it's still always there. And I think the way to like maybe avoid having art in the context of politics would be to not publish it and to just like do it for yourself, maybe. But I also think that it's so beautiful how much there is in art, how many concepts and how many interpretations. And for me personally, literature has always been a very big part of my life, like from primary school on. I actually couldn't even really imagine, now that I think of it, doing anything else, because it has always been there.
You have been a part of literature right now.
And I think only when I got maybe to my bachelor's, I discovered that there's so much more art forms that are extremely interesting, also like in the research topics that I was working with. For example, I'm extremely interested in series and movies, but also I have a very great love for pop culture. I think pop culture is often disregarded as the lower form of culture in opposition to high culture. But I think pop culture is so relevant because it's popular for a reason, because it moves people and it moves a lot of people. And I think in pop culture, we can see a lot of dynamics that society is working with currently.
It captures also the soul of the time, the zeitgeist.
Definitely. Yeah, the zeitgeist, definitely. And I think that is extremely interesting. So I'm also very interested in music nowadays, especially in pop music. and how it like speaks to society. And also like for academic research, like at some point, I think when I was still in my master's, I figured out, for example, that there's always Jewish characters in American sitcoms, but there's never any Jews in German series. And I thought it was so interesting, and also how much humor there is in art, because especially in the US, I think because Judaism is just a lot more normal there, it's a lot more assimilated. There's always like also so much humor in working with that, especially if you look at sitcoms like maybe The Big Bang Theory or New Girl or series like Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. There's so much there, and there's so much like also like self-irony. Especially when it's Jewish creators that are acting or writing these series. And I think that's just art is so interesting. I think art is like kind of how we express life in general, and how we also relate to others and to the world and the reality that we live in, and how we share realities a lot, I think, through art.
And also maybe liberating.
Yes.
I mean, when you depict yourself or the stereotypes in art, you are also kind of getting free of these stereotypes, maybe.
Yes.
As the example that you gave, actually, these self-joking, self-depiction, and in a really humorous way, maybe that could be also a liberating way of using art.
Yes, definitely. There's a lot of different strategies, I think, to work with your own identity in art. But I also very much like it when it's in like a very humorous, pop cultural, liberating sense. I think not everything has to be so serious all the time. Also in literary analysis or in cultural analysis, there can still be room for also just like some humorous way to approach life. And I think that's extremely nice. And that's especially in music and in series, I would say, and in movies. And I also kind of like to work with that. I'm also considering to work with one movie and maybe to include it. I don't know if this will work out, also because I only really started my PhD project in April. So that's like 4 months ago. So I'm still very much at the start of like figuring out how everything comes together in the end. But I think it would be nice to at least look at the body of art that's there in these three countries, and at least kind of consider what else is there besides literature, and how is Judaism portrayed there.
We will be keeping in touch, actually, mm-hmm. and we are looking forward to see how you combine art and academic efforts, which will be really interesting for us to share with our listeners. So thank you, Nadia, so much for joining us today. It was a really enjoyable, but at the same time, really informative interview for me. And if you liked our episode, please don't forget to subscribe. And you can also listen to previous episodes in which we discovered the dichotomy between us and them. So thank you so much and see you. Bye.
Thank you very much. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the HGGS podcast series, Us and Them. In this series, we bring you conversations with experts from a wide range of disciplines, from the social sciences to the humanities, from law to economics. If you enjoyed our podcast, we invite you to explore our previous episodes and subscribe to our channel so you never miss a new episode. Stay tuned for more insightful interviews coming soon.